Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So the Kindle, the iPad, the Nook, these e-readers are certainly convenient and impressive pieces of technology, but for some, reading is just too personal to take place on a screen, and books are more than just a container for vehicles for words and stories. To some, the physical books themselves are actually important keepsakes, sometimes even mile markers in an individual's life, and almost any book lover has or remembers that one cherished book. Perhaps you've read it so many times that eventually the spine of the book split, the cover might have fallen off, the pages are now faded and yellow. You could have bought a nice new paperback version, but there's just something about that old book that you've grown attached to. Well, our next guest is Sean Manning, editor of Bound to Last, 30 Writers on Their Most Cherished Books. It's a compilation of essays from writers on those certain books that hold a special place in their lives. Joyce Maynard writes about her father's Bible. Anthony Swafford, who went on to write Jarhead, remembers the copy of The Stranger that he carried as a Marine in the first Gulf War. Imagine reading Camus on the front. And in just a few minutes, we'll hear from authors Ed Park and Sigrid Nunez on their most cherished books. And listeners, we're going to open the phones for your most cherished book. What is it about that physical book, and what book was it for you? Probably as a teenager or in your 20s. Maybe it's important because it reminds you of a time in your life when you first read it, or perhaps it was given to you by someone special. Whatever it is, let us know about your, not just your most favorite book, your most cherished book. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Sean Manning, editor of Bound to Last. Welcome.
Thank you, Brian. Happy Halloween.
What's the distinct happy Halloween to you? And your book is dressed up as, I don't know, it looks like
that's
Catcher
familiar
in the Rye.
Yeah, that's the old grade school cover that you probably carried around with the maroon and the gold lettering.
And tell us what you're trying to do.
I just despise ebooks. So I thought that I'd do something to commemorate books as mementos, and just like you said in the opening, mile markers in one's life. So it's a pretty simple concept. I just got 30 of my favorite writers together and had them pick a book that they own. And, you know, it's a distinction. It's not the book, necessarily the book itself, the story itself that meant something to them, but the actual physical book, what that represented and reminded them of.
So let's go right to one of your contributors, Ed Park, a founding editor of The Believer and author of the book Personal Days, a novel. And he writes about, of all things, Dungeons Master's Guide, the original book on which Dungeons and Dragons was based. Hi, Ed. Welcome to WNYC.
Great to be here.
And I'm sure there are some people who don't even realize that there is a book and not just a game.
Yes. Well, in the early days, even before I started playing, it came out as a three book set and three book supplement, and then they sort of kept updating the rules, and each time, you know, there would be a new book. I was around, I guess, 9 or 10, I think, when I first started playing, sort of inducted by older, you know, kids in my school who had older brothers who had played, and I was playing the basic Dungeons & Dragons set, but there was, you know, in the hobby store, something called Advanced Dungeons & Dragons, of which the Dungeon Master's Guide is sort of the cornerstone work, the key work.
One of the things I liked about your essay, you wrote about some of the great words used in the Dungeon Master's Guide, like melee, clairvoyance, malevolent, basilisk. So you are into the vocab?
Very much so. And, you know, right when you start playing, you learn things like dexterity and charisma, things like that. And, you know, for an 8 or 9 year old, it's not the most, or 9 or 10 year old, it's not the most common vocabulary. And it's funny, though, because now when I'm reading books by people, mostly men my age, and I notice words like that, I know that they played Dungeons and Dragons, paladin, thaumaturge, like things like that. That's sort of the secret that's being passed along.
You know that they played Dungeons and Dragons, but you're right that you didn't even play the game that much. You were actually more into the guide.
Yeah, I was sort of into them as literature in a weird way. to actually play Dungeons and Dragons requires a lot of work, and you kind of have to get a certain number of people together, and this wasn't always easy. You know, I couldn't, you know, 10 years old, I couldn't really drive around. But I would read these books and study them and just be fascinated by them. For the vocabulary, as we said, but just these elaborate charts to almost to cover any possibility that any event that could come up in a typical game. So there's a chart about types of insanity, and you can roll it. You know, you roll a 20-sided die, and your character can have, you know, if you roll a 14, your character is manic depressive. You roll a 16, he or she has sadomasochism on the brain. So there are all these, you know, all these kind of wonderful, strange charts going on. It was like a guide to a world or to a life, I think. It really has stayed with me in that sense.
So, Ed Park, thanks for chiming in. We appreciate it.
Thanks very much.
Sean Manning, editor of Bound to Last, 30 writers on their most cherished books. Listeners, we want to hear your story. You heard Ed's about the Dungeon Master's Guide. What's your most cherished book? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Let's go right to a call. Shelley in West Orange, you're on WNYC. Hi, Shelley.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. The book that turned me totally around was Cat's Cradle by Kurt Vonnegut.
Mm-hmm.
It was given to me, it was assigned reading by a student teacher in high school, but it was just, to me, the most revelatory tale told, you know, as a science fiction novel, but so funny and so clearly pointing out the way adults contrive war and contrive religion and just make it up. I mean, I don't know if you know the story, but...
Sure. Do you still have it?
Oh, I do, yeah. I've given it to my kids. In a way, it kind of had become like a religious, what's the word, you know, where you tell your children to read this book.
A proselytizer.
Because it kind of opens their eyes. And
Shelley, thank you very much. I might have my tattered Slaughterhouse 5 around somewhere, Sean.
I think you might have read Dungeons & Dragons, thrown out the word proselytizer.
but what is it for you? Did you name – I don't think you – named one of your own.
I did. There's the essay in the book about Ulysses, which is a book that I never finished, actually. And that kind of speaks to the point of the book, is it's about the book itself rather than the story. And it's a book that I picked up while I was working in the Strand when I first came to New York. I worked there for about a year. And so, you know, when I look at that book, it always reminds me of my first year here and what a stranger I felt. And now I'm going on 10 years in the city, and I look back with fondness at how naive I was and or maybe I'm still naive, but I like to think otherwise.
Naive, but an author's credit to your name.
Absolutely.
Bijan in Massapequa, thanks so much for calling. What's your most cherished book?
Hi, thank you. My most cherished book is called The Rotters Club by Jonathan Coe. It's a coming-of-age story of a teenager in 1970s England. And what is so important for me is... when I had read this book, I was also a teenager. So, I mean, though I wasn't going through the same issues, a lot of, like, the coming-of-age issues were relevant to me. And when I was reading it, I was traveling through France. And it was so nice that I could pick up this book and read it on the train or the plane or, you know, at a cafe or, you know, wherever I was going. And it's become kind of like part of me, this book that I absolutely love, and I reread, and it helps me, you know, go back to when I was traveling. So it's a great memento.
Bijan, thank you very much. We appreciate it. Yeah. It's a good story. And also joining us now is the author Sigrid Nunez. Some of you may know Salvation City. Sigrid, thanks so much for coming back on WNYC. How you doing?
I'm fine. Thanks for having me.
And what is your most cherished book?
My book is Edith Hamilton's Mythology, Timeless Tales of Gods and Heroes. And it's a book that I first read when I was around 11 or 12. It was my mother's copy, and I loved it. This was definitely, for me, my favorite reading before mythology had been fairy tales, so it was a natural progression. So here were love stories, war stories, animal stories, stories of heroism and magical transformation. And I took this book with me when I left home, and I had this same copy. It had a very striking cover with an image of Perseus holding up the head of Medusa, the monster, that the Gorgon that he has just slain. And it began to fall apart, and for a while I had masking tape on the spine so that it was a beige stripe between Bullfinch and Robert Graves. And then I kept it together with some rubber bands, and finally I had to put it in a baggie because it had fallen apart so much. And
there, you really cherished that book.
Yes, I did, but then what happened is that I was in a bookstore and I saw another copy of Mythology, and I bought it thinking it's time to get rid of the other one. And the new Mythology is page by page, it's identical. The text is identical with the same Steel Savage drawings. But what couldn't be replaced was the aura. And so every time I can't look at this new edition, which I only got a year and a half ago, without feeling a pang, because I missed the old book, and also because it was a memento of childhood, and it was the book that my mother read. It was a book that I read because it was a favorite book of my mother's. So what I don't have now is the book that she turned with her own hand. So I do regret it.
And you jogged a memory for me, because in middle school I was given that same book, that same little paperback edition of Edith Hamilton's Mythology with Perseus on the cover.
Yes, it was a mass market.
And it didn't have the same impact on me that obviously it had on you, but I loved your essay. And you wrote that you were already familiar with creation stories in the Bible at age 11, but they didn't affect you the same as learning the Greek mythology. Just in 30 seconds, because we got to run, but how come? Why do you think that version of mythology got you?
I think it's because it was the Greek and Roman myths. That's what she's writing about. Also, the Norse myths, which were not as interesting to me. They're just particularly beautiful. She used the ancient sources to gather these myths together. She has a beautiful style, and she has the way of retelling these myths without getting in the way of the stories themselves. And she explains them a little bit. But she did a very, very beautiful job of making this anthology.
Great. Sigrid Nunez, thanks so much.
Thank you.
For chiming in. I love your essay in the book. And, Sean, it's interesting. Both Ed Park and Sigrid Nunez first read their most cherished books around age 11. Do you think that's a significant age in a reader's life, or did you get a lot from around then from your contributors?
Yeah, there were quite a few books that were around adolescence, and I think there is something about a book being most of the stories tied into parents and the relationship between parents and children. And some of them, like Jonathan Miles' essay, talks about his mother's battle with Alzheimer's, and he has discovered a copy of Katharine Porter's Ship of Fools. And so, but from childhood to adulthood, I think it is bound up a lot in parenthood.
Lisa in Forest Hills is going to get the last word with a book that is her most cherished book from way back when. Hey, Lisa, thanks for calling.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. Your show is brilliant.
Thank you. And?
My most cherished book is a paperback dictionary that I bought when I was 17 and I first started college. I would highlight every word I had to look up. I still have it. I'm 44, and I still do that.
You could go to dictionary.com.
Yeah, no, it's, I don't know, something about holding this book that's been with me, you know, more than half my life means is more of a diary of my, you know, learning
the key to all the other books.
That's right.
The tattered dictionary. Lisa, thank you very much. Ed and Sean, the last word.
Go old-fashioned books.
Bound to Last, 30 Writers on Their Most Cherished Book. Forward by Ray Bradbury, edited by Sean Manning. Sean, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And on a related note, we will conclude next our series with Leslie Dunton Downer on words that have come into English from other languages. And we will read some of the best of what you've been submitting all week of words that you're familiar with from other languages that you think English should incorporate. So stay with us.